everyone, and welcome to Three Peds in a Pod. We're wishing everyone a happy Easter, a happy Passover to all of those who recently celebrated, and also to everyone who is now observing. Happy Ramadan to everyone who's fasting right now. So everyone, how has your weekend been? How has your week been? How have you guys been since we last talked?
I've been doing okay. Easter for me, I'm Eastern Orthodox, was last weekend. It was definitely a different Easter than usual. We watched Mass in our PJs in bed via Facebook Live.
At least that they did that. That was awesome that they put like a, they did the Mass over Facebook.
Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. Yeah, some churches did it over Facebook. Some did it via YouTube. It was really funny because I had to get my in-laws and my parents, like the website, teach them how to do it so like they could watch Mass.
That's so cute. Yeah.
Yeah, I did pretty well with that. I was impressed. But yeah, it was definitely different. We didn't get to see our families like we normally would. We didn't get to exchange Easter eggs or crack Easter eggs like we normally would. So it was definitely a very hard time.
For sure.
So yeah, it was a very different Easter because we were unable to be with our family and friends. We were unable to be together. When we cooked or ate food, we made a whole huge brunch just for the two of us and enjoyed it. So it was a nice new tradition, but we really missed our families.
Right. It was definitely really hard. I know I've been following a lot of like news broadcasts and stuff that have been talking about how difficult the holidays are at this time. It's really like unprecedented. I don't think there's ever been any situation like this where multiple holidays for multiple different religions have been affected. I know right now for us with Ramadan, it's also been really difficult. It's largely based on like social gatherings and eating together with people and going to the mosque, and no one has been able to do that. So that's been very difficult.
One thing that really pissed me off is, unfortunately, not everyone on my Instagram feed or Facebook feed actually practiced social distancing during the Easter holiday. Whether you're Catholic Orthodox, not Catholic, or you're Christian Catholic, whether you're Christian Orthodox, and if you observe Easter a few weeks ago or just last week, some people still like met up with their families, with their parents, with their siblings, with their friends, and had Easter together, took pictures, hugging each other. And normally I'm all about that stuff. I'm as touchy-feely as they get, but so many of us are withholding from hugging our loved ones, and it's so hard on all of us. But the only way to get better is if everyone just stops for a minute, gives hugs and kisses virtually, and tells everyone how much they love them with words instead of necessarily touching them. And I think that's really important with more holidays to come across all cultures.
That's definitely true. Yeah, I did see things like that where a lot of people were still getting together and still posting like family pictures and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine how difficult it would be. I'm obviously far away from family, so I don't really have that temptation of meeting them for throughout the week. But I know for some people, if you live like maybe 10 or 15 minutes away from your parents, it might be so tempting to have like Easter dinner with them. So I can't even imagine. I can't speak on it.
There are ways to do it and still properly socially distance.
There definitely is. There definitely is. And I do disagree with the, there's been a lot of like talk of like religious leaders in every religion who are kind of saying like, hey, yeah, let's forget the rules and go to
wait,
church
what?
Or go to mosque.
Who said that?
I saw that. You didn't see that on the news?
No, that's crazy.
There was multiple from honestly every religion that were saying like, just come to the mosque or to the church or whatever and ignore the rules. And I don't agree
ridiculous.
With that. Yeah, it's
there are crazy. Certain churches that didn't close for Easter and were open, really? And they encourage their congregation to come. Technically, I think even by the law, by like Governor Whitmore's stay-at-home law, religious institutions are exempt.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't think she can say whether or not you can go to a religious establishment because separation of church and state.
Right. Oh, right. That makes sense. That does make sense.
But I think people in general just have not been going, and churches have themselves, for the most part, been saying, we will not be holding service besides virtual service for the greater good of their congregation.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay, so today we wanted to address the topic of fasting in children and health concerns associated with it. Given that like a large number of families are observing this tradition across the globe during the month of Ramadan. But We wanted to note that overall, as pediatricians, we do not recommend fasting in children. Children need nutrients for growth, muscle, and brain development. But we do understand, for cultural reasons, families still would like to partake in this tradition. Therefore, hopefully we can educate parents on how to safely partake in fasting, what to look for, and possibly educate medical providers who are listening in and school teachers who spend most of the day with kids who are able to like witness symptoms and effects. So like a lot of cultures partake in fasting, right, Rabba?
Yeah, a lot of religions do partake in fasting in different ways. For example, like Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, the Baha'i faith, Jainism, Hinduism, all of these cultures fast in different ways. Some of them, fasting can last multiple hours and sometimes even multiple weeks. Some of them have fasting that involves abstaining from certain foods for a longer period of time, and then some abstain from all foods altogether or different foods and drink. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is generalizable to a lot of different cultures and a lot of different religions who fast at different times throughout the year. So Slavica, you want to tell us a little bit about Orthodox fasting?
Sure. So I'm Christian Orthodox, which is a little different than Jewish Orthodox. And as Christian Orthodox, the way we fast is pretty much most people either go vegan or pescatarian for about a 7-week portion. So what that means is if you choose to partake in it, you would do 7 weeks of no meat, although seafood's allowed, no dairy, no poultry. Mm-hmm. And that includes, like, for example, you can't use butter because it comes from animal and like dairy products, those types of things. So anything that's used in your food or any substitutes have to be vegan and or pescatarian. There are various alternations to this and how people do it. Mm-hmm. Some people only do it for a week during Lent. Some people only do it on Fridays during Lent. Some people only do it Wednesdays and Fridays during Lent. Some people do it Wednesdays and Fridays the whole year or Fridays the whole year. But Lent for us is considered the 7 weeks prior to Easter. And that is technically the time which you should do it. And overall, that's how we do it in the Orthodox culture, which is a little different than how people do it in the Catholic religion. And the Catholic religion, what you do is you choose one thing. To my knowledge, it can be either a food or a drink supply, or it can be an action or an object or something that you choose to give up for a period of time before Easter. I think it's also about 7 weeks, maybe a couple days shorter. Mm-hmm. Than how long the Eastern Orthodox religion does it for. However, we are able to eat throughout the entire day, whatever we want, as long as we abstain from those things. Catholics also tend to not eat meat on Fridays, for example, or Wednesdays and Fridays during Lent, as well as giving up one other thing, whether it be chocolate or pop or social media, mm-hmm. something that is near and dear to their heart.
Yeah, I remember one of our senior residents last year who's now an attending, she gave up Starbucks coffee for Lent, and she was like suffering the entire month. It was really funny. And it was so difficult for her. So it just goes to show.
Only Starbucks though, not other types?
No, just Starbucks, because that's like the only coffee that she drinks. Okay. She swears by it. Like it wakes her up, I guess, more than anything else. So she gave it up and she was struggling. Like, so it's not an easy thing to do for sure, to willingly give something up.
Yeah, I mean, when I do it, I love my Starbucks too, and I have to get like soy, and I hate how my Starbucks tastes with soy, but I also
Oh, because you have to stop the dairy, right?
I can't do any dairy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's difficult. But although most religions overall agree that sick and young people are exempt from fasting, after discussing with people from various other faiths, we realize that this decision is largely based off of personal experience and personal preferences and cultural factors. So like we said, various other religions fast. For example, the Baha'i religion, they do a 19-day fasting period from sunrise to sunset, and they abstain from all food and drink.
Yeah, and in Yom Kippur, Jews don't eat or drink anything for 24 hours.
But for those who are part of the Hindu faith, their fasting is varied. They fast on certain days, restricting intake of certain foods or all food and drink altogether. Sometimes they do this multiple times a week, or it could be a whole entire month where they're fasting for a whole day duration. So guys, I know the way I fast is a little different than the way you guys fast. So why don't you tell me when you guys made the decision that you wanted to go ahead and fast and how exactly you went about that?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what Ramadan is, it's basically a Muslim way of fasting. We fast for 1 month. We abstain from all food and drink, and that does include water, from dawn until sunset. And it actually changes every year. So the month varies a little bit. So it can range anywhere from 8 hours to 17 hours. So around this year, we're fasting for a duration of around 15 hours. In terms of our experience with fasting, I don't know, Farheen, how old were you, do you think, when you started fasting?
So I think when I like initially started, I was young, like elementary school age. I know when I was like very young, I like my parents didn't want me to fast because like they didn't think it was healthy and they wanted me to still perform well in school and like Islamically it wasn't required of me. But I wanted to like be part of the festivities. I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to copy everyone else. So like they started letting me do like a half day, like maybe I was 7 years old. And then like, as I got older, maybe like around fifth grade or so, I was doing like the whole day, but like only on the weekends. So I would still go to school and still be able to eat. And then maybe like, yeah, in middle school, I was doing it more regularly, but still maybe like probably only half the month because my parents didn't encourage it. And then in high school, I think I was doing it more regularly.
Yeah. So, I mean, the general rule is that you should start fasting once you hit puberty. But because it's such a big part of the culture and the experience, and usually the whole entire house is fasting, a lot of little kids really want to try fasting. I can't actually remember when I started. I know for sure I was fasting in middle school. But prior to that, I can't really remember. I mean, I think I would do like a day here or there. But like you said, it is actually like a big misconception that like parents force fasting on kids. A lot of parents are the opposite and they don't want their kid to fast because they're worried about how they're going to do in school. And like you said, that they're going to fall behind, especially if they're living in a country where school is still running like during Ramadan. Some countries, they close down the schools, but for us, obviously, in like the US, Canada, etc., school is running, so it does take like an effect on you when you're in class. What about you, Slavica? Do you remember when you first started practicing Lent?
So I want to say I was about 18 years old when I decided I was going to start it. Growing up, my parents would fast on Fridays, so they'd be pretty much a vegan or pescatarian on Fridays. My grandparents did the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So when I came out and said that I wanted to do the whole 7 weeks, it was a huge shock to everyone.
Wow.
Because most people only did it for maybe, like my dad would do a week before Easter sometimes. And sometimes my grandparents would too. And they kind of asked me why I wanted to do it. And for me, it was more so like a spiritual thing. I was kind of like a spiritual cleanse type of thing.
Right.
And to help me like connect more religiously. I kind of wanted to see if I could do it. And so I did it and I did the whole 7 weeks and it was great. And then ever since then, I did it literally every single year.
Oh, but really?
Yeah. Wow. For the last 10 years. I did not do it this past year, however. A lot of COVID stuff happening.
Yeah, stressful.
It's hard. But yeah, so I do all the time. It's important to note that when you do it, you also like obviously abstain from alcohol. For those that drink alcohol, those are the rules. A lot of people still drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't really as strict as to like what they put in their food. Right. But that's technically what you are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Some people have even like, I know my mom's grandmother, so my great grandmother, certain days during Lent, she just wouldn't eat or drink anything all day long for a 24-hour period. I know she did a lot for Good Friday. So there's everyone has their own interpretation and their own limits of what they can and cannot do. I just feel super thankful that when we do Lent, we're able to drink at any part of the day. So,
yeah, I definitely think that's the hardest part is the water. But do you find that younger kids are trying to practice Lent? Like younger?
So I feel like my parents' generation, my grandparents definitely practiced it. And then my parents might do that Friday. And then I do feel like my generation is more so starting to do the whole 7 weeks or 1 week.
Yeah.
I don't know if that has a lot to do with just like what happened in the countries where our parents grew up and then moving right. here and stuff like that. I'm not quite sure what the full influence on that is. Or more people that are younger just try to be closer to their culture.
Right.
My husband always jokes that like luckily he's related to only try doing it in the beginning just to lose weight. But the way I look at it, like all you do is eat carbs all day. How are you gonna lose weight?
That's low-key, true, right? That's the same as me, to be honest.
But how do you lose weight?
I don't know. Ramadan, you never lose weight.
You never lose weight. But yeah. Like, I'm always trying to.
You can't. And you think like, oh, I'm gonna work out, and then that's gonna like burn all the. No, that's
you're
never.
Probably like so tired.
Yeah,
tired.
You just eat junk. Like as soon as you're allowed to eat, all you do is eat carbs and junk and dessert.
My husband tells me that I'm also super mean when I do that.
Maybe because you're like
we're touchy-feely and
well I heard that people who go like keto and stuff they're like not depressed they're irritable? Like angry and irritable yeah.
Well that's the word
so it's probably
irritable
it's like withdrawal
yes
maybe from the dairy I don't know
the hormones
withdrawal that's really funny okay so we thought that this topic was especially relevant right now, and we wanted to interview our running expert on the topic, our fabulous co-resident, Dr. Iman Devaja, MD, MPH. So to give you a little intro about her, so she is a senior pediatric resident at the Children's Hospital of Michigan in Detroit with us. She graduated from Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine and the University of Michigan School of Public Health. She is the principal investigator of multiple public health projects that focus on health disparities in Southeast Michigan. She recently published a paper called Pediatric Muslim Fasting Practices in Southeast Michigan, a community survey in the Journal of Community Health in January of 2020. So we love this girl. She's going to educate us all a lot right now. So we're so excited to have her as our first guest on Three Feeds in a Pod. So welcome, Iman.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored and excited to be here.
We love it. We're so
Yay.
Excited. We have so many questions for you.
Okay. I really hope I can answer them all.
You got this, girl.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So I know we kind of touched on this a little bit, but what is fasting like in Islam? And is it practiced among all Muslims?
It's a really good question. So I'll try to be like as kind of stick to the book as I can. You know, in Islam and according to like the Quran, our holy book, fasting is prescribed from dawn to dusk for the duration of the entire month of Ramadan. And people fast from water, food, medication, and even like intercourse for the duration of that time period. Fasting actually starts at the time of puberty, and there's multiple exemptions made. A recent study by the Pew Research Center actually showed that more Muslims fast than those that actually pray. So it's extremely prevalent among Muslims all across the world, across all cultures. And like Rabah and Farheen mentioned, it's become a really big part of the culture around family and holiday time. And so you see more and more people partaking in it. So it's a really big deal around the world, for sure. Now, in terms of the health benefits of fasting, we understand that for, you know, really generations of Muslims, Muslim Americans, as well as Muslims around the world, this has been a common practice. So I think for us as pediatricians, we always have to remember to make sure that we give, you know, advice that's practical and is both culturally and religiously competent. Now, in terms of the health benefits specifically, there's been studies in adults, but really the studies in pediatrics and children are not that many and are pretty limited. What we do know is that colloquially that fasting really helps, you know, in general help with kids developing willpower. It helps with them understanding their own kind of limitations as well. And I think it also is an understanding of mind-body balance. And so I think a lot of parents, you know, in our study really saw fasting as very beneficial and healthy for children. And so we always want to make sure that we are able to provide the care and the anticipatory guidance that can kind of mirror that. And so I think that's something for parents to know, is that pediatricians are really willing to work with parents, whatever their beliefs may be.
So who would be considered exempt from fasting?
And, you know, that's a question we get as pediatricians and even as Muslims all the time. So there's a lot of people who would be exempt from fasting. Like I said, you start fasting at the age of puberty. And puberty, you know, in pediatrics is really widespread. You know, some kids can enter puberty at the age of 10. Others will enter age of puberty around like 14. So those that start around puberty, those are exempt, are usually like pregnant women, those women that are menstruating, people who have chronic medical conditions, people that have acute medical conditions, people that are traveling. I think there's potentially even more, including those with mental health illnesses. So the way we think about it usually is those who really shouldn't be fasting, you know? That's kind of the approach that a lot of the scholars and a lot of families will take it as.
That's good to know. It's a good point. So Iman, can you tell us about the research that you did on fasting?
Absolutely. You know, for me, it was when I was a student in the Graduate School of Public Health, I was fasting and I was in the middle of a research internship. And when the pediatrician that was my mentor really started asking me about fasting, and she actually didn't know that a lot of children and adolescents were fasting. And I think that to me was the big light bulb. So I really started looking into it, and I put my public health practice, into practice, basically. So I went out into the community. I got a bunch of research assistants, and we collected about 920 surveys from parents in the community. Wow. So nearly 1,000 people of different parents in the community. We surveyed them and everywhere, from like bakeries to clinics to, even online. And what we found basically was that people really revered the place of fasting in their homes and in their families and their culture. And they really said about 70% of the time their pediatricians were not aware that their child was fasting. And most of the time the doctors had never asked them if they were interested in fasting. And most interestingly, out of all of it, most parents actually felt that it was a healthy practice. And really felt strongly that a lot of health professionals and people should know that they really felt like this was a really good practice and had a lot of health benefits to people. So it was definitely a very unique study for our region, for sure.
So you're saying that physicians don't really know that their patients are fasting, correct?
So basically, the study asked parents, you know, does your pediatrician know? And about 70% of them said, no, my pediatrician doesn't know that my child is fasting this Ramadan.
Wow. So do you feel like involving your pediatrician or your physician is important for people whose kids are fasting?
Absolutely. You know, I think as parents, especially when it comes to various like religious practices, you know, parents are really just trying to make the best decision for that kid, for their specific kid, you know, that kid who might have a medical condition or might have sports and activities, who might have AP classes. And so a lot of parents might need that guidance. I really urge parents to talk to their physicians about it. And that's actually another part of our project, is now we're doing a lot of education to physicians on what this is and how they can best counsel.
That's awesome. We'll definitely like follow up on that.
Absolutely. We'd love to share with you.
So you mentioned a little bit about kids that could be at risk. So what health risks exist for those who are thinking about fasting?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of parents out there, you know, they're thinking whether their child should fast or not. I think you need to look at your specific child. You need to look at their weight for their height and their weight for their age, and really talk to their physician about that. You got to look and see, you know, if there's any other medical conditions, whether it's diabetes or asthma, other things like mental health illnesses. This is a kid that you've seen may has a tendency toward depression, anxiety, eating disorders. Those are all things to consider. And then the other thing, just like, you know, how long are they in school for? What after school activities are they partaking in? Whether they you think that they can do it or not. So I think it's always a lot of things to take into consideration.
That's a good point. So what about kids that are taking medications? Which medications are allowed, and what's the ruling on like oral medication use while fasting?
So technically for the fast, you actually can't, you know, take pills or a syrup. So you can't take medications during the fast from dawn to dusk, but you can definitely take medications, you know, after you break your fast at the iftar time, which we call it, or before you start fasting, which we call the suhoor time. And so those time periods. The other thing is for children with asthma who do take inhalers either daily or as needed, they actually can continue to take those even while fasting. And so that should be no problem at all.
Nice. Do you think it's okay for type 1 diabetics to fast?
That is the million-dollar question, Farheen. That is when we present our work at all these conferences with all these pediatricians, you know, that is the question they ask. They ask, is it healthy, especially for our diabetics? So that's actually a question that we're currently studying. We have approval from the research board to study this topic at the Children's Hospital of Michigan, where we see a lot of Muslim patients. And so we're actually currently looking to see how the type 1 diabetes patients are doing and whether it is safe for them, and looking at all of the health implications of fasting, and just in general to understand how their parents feel about it. We have guidelines for adults on fasting among diabetics, but there's nothing for kids out there. And so we've really had to, as pediatricians, just kind of figure it out as we go. So that's something to really consider.
So just side note, during your research, did you come across type 1 diabetic pediatric patients who were fasting?
So in terms of people, diabetic children, there was a section on our initial survey that asked people about children that fast and have diabetes. We didn't specifically ask if they had diabetes or not, but for those kids with chronic medical conditions, we specifically asked, and it seemed like parents definitely had a different way of practicing.
That's interesting. So just from my understanding, like basically there are people with chronic medical conditions who are fasting.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some warning signs or things parents should look out for when their child is fasting?
You know, there's so many, you know, anything you think of when a child is fasting, you should definitely look for dehydration. You know, if your child is really not drinking enough at night, or if they're not having those like enough like food intake or calorie intake, if you see them losing a significant amount of weight. The other things is if you find that they're starting to get hypoglycemic, which means they get low sugar and they start getting like tremors, or like sweating. And another thing is like a lot of psychological things. So some kids who don't eat for a long period of time, they can just kind of have a little bit of a brain fog. They might not be doing too well in school, or they might have a lot of mood instability. And then lastly, of course, any kid who's not eating or drinking, you should always think of, you know, if they faint or anything like that. So as parents, we definitely have to be on the lookout for this kind of things. And I think a lot of parents during our survey definitely were thinking of these things.
I get super hangry, so I would have a lot of mood instability, but hey, that's
to be honest, I do too. So
I get hangry.
Someone who fasts for Ramadan, I actually find it very challenging. I've found it challenging every single year. And so I think it goes to show that sometimes, you know, what we do is not the easiest thing, but it's, you know, so revered that you end up, you know, practicing it anyway.
Yeah. I was telling people the other day that every Ramadan, I feel like it's the first time I've ever fasted. Like the anxiety and like the pressure and stress and all that you feel, it's like the first time every time.
Yeah, absolutely. The first couple days, at least the first week of fasting, I just feel like a bus hit me sometimes. And then my body really acclimates to it. And I think I start feeling some of the positive effects, definitely.
Right.
I remember like 2 years ago, it was our fourth year of medical school. And like at that point, we had already matched. I had nothing going on. And like, that was the best Ramadan. I did no work. I didn't exert myself the entire day. It was so easy to fast. I even like, sometimes I was working out majority of the days and like still fasting, but that's because like I was literally doing nothing else in my life.
Yeah, I think it's really an important conversation. When we did this survey, we asked these parents at the height of Ramadan, where Ramadan was almost entirely during the school period. So it really changed the conversation for a lot of people. Now that COVID has hit and school is canceled, and people can go to the mosque, they can do dinner together. You know, kids are definitely having, it's a different conversation now, I think, than it was last year, for sure.
Yeah, I do think so. I think a lot of people are letting their kids fast this year because they're just at home. They're not really doing anything. Like, I know I was just talking to my sister the other day, and like my 10-year-old nephew, I guess, has been fasting. And my grandma and my aunt are like freaking out about it. They actually told her the other day, they told her that I told them not to let him fast. So my sister texted me. She's like, "Hey, did you say he shouldn't fast?" I'm like, "No, I think they're just trying to convince you that like he shouldn't." But yeah, apparently he's been doing it. He wants to. Because like,
wait, I love how they're using you as a cop.
They're using me as like the shield of like
the pediatrician.
Yeah. But it's so funny. They don't think my sister's gonna like ask me or something. But apparently he's been fasting and like loving it. So yeah, a lot of kids like are definitely participating this year.
Yeah, I think one other thing that we got from a lot of our parents, a lot of parents would say, you know, they would say, kind of like Farheen, you mentioned, like a lot of parents were hesitant or apprehensive about letting their child fast. And a lot of parents found that the kids wanted to fast because, you know, they see everyone around them fasting and they want to try it at the very least. So that's definitely very prevalent.
So I kind of want to know, since I'm not Muslim, what are, like, how long does Ramadan last? What are the dates? Is it ever easier to fast in certain times versus other times?
I'm sure Rabah and Farheen could also pitch in here, but Ramadan, I think, is confusing to a lot of people. Because
it is, yeah.
It's not like Christmas or Easter, like they have like a particular day and you can kind of plan it out. Ramadan is actually based on the lunar calendar. And so every year it changes. Moves forward about 10 days. And that's why it's very confusing to everyone when it starts and when it ends. But it still lasts 1 month. And this year it started April 24th. So this episode's really timely. And it'll last until about May 24th.
And so is it 28 days, 4 weeks, or 30 days? Like, what do you consider a month?
I believe 30 days usually. And it does change every year. It kind of like moves up the calendar every year. So a few years ago it was in the winter, and that was definitely the easiest time to fast, because as soon as the sun would go down at like 4 or 5 p.m. Yeah. And then you'd be done fasting. But in the summer it's been like extremely difficult, because we break our fast at, like, right now I think we break it at 8:20 and we start fasting at 5:20 in the morning. So it's extremely difficult. But yeah, in the winter, like, that's a good question. It's definitely a lot easier.
So regarding dates, like the food, I don't know, Iman, if you're going to know about this. This might be out of the scope of your research. but are dates really that great? Like, are they really considered a superfood? I know, like, as Muslims, we traditionally break our fast with dates, but I don't really know much else about them as a nutrition source.
You know, I am not an expert on dates, but from what my parents have told me and from a little bit of Google searching, I definitely found that, I think it's because the reason people recommend dates is because it's very high glucose and it's very rapidly available to the body. Right. So once you eat it, it automatically, it's kind of like drinking like a crazy Slurpee, but in a healthy,
like an orange juice or something.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like a very healthy form of sugar, and it's very rapidly available to your whole body. And so that's the reason people usually break their fast with a date.
That makes sense. So Iman, for adolescents with eating disorders, is it recommended to fast, or how do you go about that from a physician perspective?
Now, that is such a good question. I think for people that are dealing with eating disorders in general, whether it's adolescents or not, especially bulimia and anorexia, any change in food habits can actually trigger And I think there's actually just been a couple of case reports about eating disorders among adolescents who fast. But in general, from my understanding and my work with the adolescent doctors, we would not recommend that children with eating disorders fast, or adolescents with eating disorders fast, or anyone for that matter, because the trigger is very severe, and it can cause like a spiral, and so a spiral effect. So I think this is one area that I think it's a strong no.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That makes sense.
I agree.
So we do have some questions from our followers. What do we need to make sure kids are getting in terms of post-fast nutrients? So when they're having iftar, what do you recommend that they eat?
Yeah, this is such a good question, because you get that one big meal, right? The thing is like, what we recommend actually is that people go ahead and have an emphasis on using complex carbohydrates for food. So not eating like that white bread, but more so offering things like, you know, lentils or wheat or oats kind of thing. And then we also recommend a lean protein source, and also different fiber rich foods and salads as well, because you definitely want those greens and veggies. And then we don't recommend people having like a huge iftar, but maybe having a modest size one, and then returning to go ahead and have a snack again in like an hour, hour and a half. And then we also recommend that patients wake up for something called suhoor, which is a meal before dawn. It's around, I think this year, around 4:30 a.m. And that way people can also kind of eat that kind of breakfast-like meal at that time. And we also recommend the same things. Avoiding caffeine is also a really important thing as well. Mm-hmm. And avoiding like high sugar drinks and processed foods, as well as sugary desserts as well.
That's good to know. I feel like most people don't follow those rules, but all of us should do better and should advise our patients.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really hard when you're fasting and you see that like delicious piece of cake. You want to eat it. Yeah, absolutely. But I think in general, I think a lot of parents try to do a little bit of this.
Especially the part about waking your kid up to eat suhoor. I think that's a really big deal, because a lot of kids don't want to because it's so early in the morning. But if they are going to fast, you definitely want to make sure that you wake them up and you give them like a solid meal to help sustain them throughout the day.
Yeah. I think one thing that we didn't touch on is how sometimes fasting can actually alter your sleep cycle. So if these kids are waking up for suhoor and they're going to sleep later because iftar might be later, that's something to consider as parents. You know, if you see that your kid is really having trouble with readjusting to that sleep schedule, definitely make sure they're taking naps, and definitely be mindful that sometimes we need a little extra rest. So maybe after they come home from school, they go ahead and they take that 1 to 2 hour nap, even if they're adolescents.
That's good to know.
I think we kind of addressed this earlier in the episode, but just to reiterate, what age is safe to start fasting, and should kids even be fasting in the first place?
Again, that's like the $1 million question. For sure. I think a lot of parents say like, give me an age. And the fact of the matter is, especially when it comes to Muslim fasting, like I said, it's prescribed, it's recommended that people start at puberty. So, and puberty shifts per person and per gender as well. And the other thing is, I think a lot of, parents say, well, when is a safe zone? I think pediatricians, we would more so lean toward that adolescent time period. So people that are usually, less than 10 usually is kind of younger than necessary. In our fasting study, when we asked when most kids started fasting, unanimously, boys and girls started fasting at the mean age of 11. So if that kind of tells you something, it tells you that people are fasting around puberty. But there's definitely people that are fasting much earlier or older. But as parents, you know, like, you know, really assess your kid and maybe talk to their pediatrician and say, for my specific kid with their specific health conditions, when do you think it is best? And I think it's usually like a conversation that is very, very important to have.
Good point.
So, Aman, what patients with which diseases are most at risk and should probably think twice or do some more research before fasting?
Those are a really good question. Some special populations that we always say to consider is we consider like kids that are pre-adolescence or pubertal children. Those are all kids, people with medical conditions like diabetes type 1 and 2, pregnant adolescents, breastfeeding, those with developmental disorders, if your kid is not gaining enough weight or if they have a lot of complex issues, maybe they're not meeting their milestones. Maybe kids are not mentally ready to fast. Kids with have mental illnesses, like we said, anxiety, depression, eating disorders, and all of those kind of things. And also you have to remember a lot of kids also have heart diseases, congenital heart diseases sometimes. And so that we definitely recommend you go ahead and talk to your doctor about for sure.
I think the big theme is just to make sure that you talk to your doctor. Like Iman said, a lot of families are not telling their pediatrician. So just building that trust is really important and being comfortable with telling them so that they can best assist you and your child.
I'm going to be honest, as a pediatrician who's not Muslim, I have never thought about asking if a patient does fast. And I think it might also be difficult for those, you don't always see your physician. So if you're not seeing your physician during that time period when fasting is happening,
that's true. That's so true because, like, especially for our adolescent patients, they're usually coming in once a year for their well check, and that's likely not going to be around the time period of Ramadan. So you won't even see them when they're fasting. So it's definitely good to like check in before they start fasting or a different part of the year, so that they can be prepared and be safe when they actually are fasting during Ramadan.
Absolutely. I really value what Slavica said. You know, you're right. Like a lot of times we don't see our pediatrician every few months, and sometimes it's not around the time that we're fasting. So I think that also contributed to the fact that a lot of parents didn't talk to their doctor about it. But what's interesting, which the part that really made me so encouraged, is that about 70% of those parents said that they really value their pediatrician's advice. They thought very highly of them. They thought they greatly understood fasting, and they felt like their pediatrician could give them a lot of good advice. Because, you know, a lot of pediatricians know a lot about nutrition as well. So I think it kind of goes to show that, you know, even if they may not be a Muslim practicing physician, they probably still know what's up. And so they can definitely help guide you.
For sure.
Absolutely. So how do we all feel about intermittent fasting? I know that's like super trendy, more so in adults, but I can definitely see like teenagers, like definitely like 21-year-olds or people in college who would be interested in intermittent fasting. I know there's been said to have like some sort of benefits in weight loss and also in possibly some benefits for the immune system regarding intermittent fasting. And I know it's different in like compared to Ramadan fasting, because it's like you're still able to drink water, you can have like black coffee, but basically no caloric intake, usually for about 16 hours. I know there's different ways to do it. But do we as pediatricians, like how do we feel about intermittent fasting in kids?
It hasn't been studied at all.
There's no data on it. That's what I tried to look up the topic as well. And it doesn't seem to be that there's any evidence saying that it's safe. And because kids, again, like they need nutrients, they're growing, their brain's developing, even like when they're like 18 years old, it's not recommended to participate in intermittent fasting.
Right. So overall, try to avoid it, I guess.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Iman, for joining us. It was wonderful having you on our podcast, and thank you for sharing all of the information you gathered from your research on Ramadan. We really appreciate it, and we're definitely sure that it's going to help a lot of families out there who are listening in.
Yay, thank you. Please come again.
Honestly, thank you so much for having me. I was so honored to be invited to Three Peas in a Pod. Everyone at the hospital is listening to this, and a lot of our parents at the clinic. So I'm so honored, and hopefully we'll be able to talk soon.
Yay.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. So just to summarize what we talked about and give you guys the quick points that you're looking for. So number one, can kids fast? Should they be fasting? So overall, the consensus is that generally speaking, we cannot, as pediatricians, recommend fasting because it is abstaining from nutrients all day. However, we do understand that culturally and religiously, children are fasting, and that this is something that we respect and we find very valuable. So we do recommend speaking to your specific pediatrician about your child and also making adjustments based on your child's needs. If they are going to fast, we definitely recommend waking them up for suhoor, giving them lots of healthy foods, fruits, vegetables, etc. in the morning. And then when they break their fast, trying to avoid lots of fried food, lots of carbs, and trying to give them the healthiest meal as possible. If your child does have a complex condition or diabetes, again, we recommend speaking with your pediatrician or their specialist on this topic and really diving into if they can fast with them.
So that brings us to the ending of our fasting episode. With that said, stay in the know on the go with 3 peas in a pod.